Welcome to episode 226 of the Conversation Leadership Podcast. Today, as often happens, we're going to dive in and kind of look at three flaws in our thinking, why we need mental models. But what's interesting is as we talk through what we're going to talk through today, another theme begins to kind of come out of what we're going to, I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm not going to give you any clues. You need to listen to the podcast, but I think this could be a value add time for you. These mental models are so important for what we're trying to do. It's just a different way of thinking. I'll see you in a few seconds as we dive into why mental models are so important for you and so important for me. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we're going to dive into mental models. We had talked about this a couple weeks ago that we were going to dive in. Got a little bit sidetracked, which is fine. Last week, we talked a little bit about, I think, Coach Belichick. And I wanted to bring something up quickly before we dive into what we're going to talk about this week with the mental models. We talked last week. We read through an article that looked at the current situation with Coach Belichick, who's one of the greatest football coaches, greatest NFL coaches of all time. He's literally number three on the chart. Right behind, I'm going to get one of their names wrong, but Don Shula, I think, is number one. He's the winningest head coach in the NFL of all time. The second one, I want to say Bill Parcells, but I could be wrong on that one. So I'm not quite sure of the second one, but then it's not Bill Parcells. It's some guy that I just heard of his first name last week. But the third guy is obviously Bill Belichick. But we talked about how even with that record, he is still kind of out of a job. It looks like he won't have a job as an NFL coach next season. And so we were talking about that a little bit. And the article talked about his failure to adjust. That it's important to be able to adjust and adapt to changing times, especially if you want to keep a job such as what he has. So it was interesting. I read that about Bill Belichick. And that night, as I was getting ready for bed, I think it was, sometimes I'll take my phone into the bathroom with me as I take my nightly shower. And I always listen to an interview of some sort. It helps keep me focused on as I'm trying to get ready for bed. And that night I thought, I want to listen to this interview from Don Shula, who was the winningest coach in the NFL. And when he talked about what made him successful, two things he mentioned, or I guess it's actually one thing, but then he talked about how it kind of played out. And I actually haven't finished the interview yet, so I'll need to take some time and make sure to finish that interview. But the one thing that he talked about was being able to adjust. I don't know if this is a word, but adjustability. I don't think that's a word. I think it's adaptability, but being able to adjust. And what he talked about is with different players on the team, he had to adjust his leadership style to their different personalities. And of course, Don Shula, if you know anything about him, he had a way of leading, and that wasn't going to change, right? Don Shula was going to be Don Shula, but he understood with different players, I've got to lead in different ways to get different things out of these different players. And so I thought it was interesting that right after recording a podcast where we look at this guy, you know, where we look at the issue surrounding Bill Belichick, and he's currently out of coaching, that to watch a video on Don Shula and to hear all about his personality and kind of who he was. But the one thing he would say was key to his success to become the winningest coach I'm sure there are a lot of things that kind of went in, but the one word that kept coming up was this word adjusting. So I'm not saying that Bill Belichick can or cannot adjust. I'm not saying that's the key. It sounds like in some of his podcast, it sounds like in some of his interviews that he had, people were fearful that he would be willing to adjust, but that is a key way. That is a key. So that happens. And then I interview the university president where I work, Point Loma Nazarene University. He's retiring this year at the end of 26 years at the helm of Point Loma Nazarene. And I ask him, if you had to write a book about your last 26 years, what would it be about? And I forget his exact words, but it had to do with change. Change is always happening. Change is always around. And so it's just a good reminder for us, you know, today, again, as we're into the new year now, we're in February now. Change is always around us, and that gets scary. It gets difficult. It's not easy to change. It's not easy to want to change, but this is the key to success, right? The president of Point Loma, his name is Dr. Bob Brower. One of the things he talked about is that, he would say that he led, I think he says, three or four different universities during his time there. And each stage required him to lead a little bit differently. So that, again, that's that willingness to adjust. You look at the environment around you and you're willing to adjust. We talked about it with one of my classes today, creative destruction, and how important that is if we're going to be in business, if we're going to be nonprofit leadership or business, is understanding that the ground is always moving underneath our feet. And so we have to constantly be changing and adapting and moving. And so, again, it was just interesting to talk about this and to hear about these things right after talking about Bill Belichick. So, again, I'm not on the inside of any of that. So I don't know what the reasons are. But if that is a reason, this could be an area for growth for Bill Belichick, is how do you transform? How do you change as you continue to move forward? Hey, this week I want to talk about this idea of getting in our own way. And some flaws, three flaws, why we need these mental models that we're going to talk about over the coming weeks. And oftentimes it's because we get in our own way. So I'm in this book here. It's called The Great Mental Models, General Thinking Concepts. And it's by Farnham Street, but I think it's Shane Parrish who actually wrote this. Anyway, I'm on page 22, and here's what he has to say. The biggest barrier to learning from contact with reality is ourselves. It's hard to understand a system that we are part of because we have blind spots where we can't see what we aren't looking for and don't notice what we don't notice. Our failures to adapt from interacting with reality spring primarily from three things. These might be the three flaws. These are the three flaws that we're going to talk about today. Number one is this: not having the right perspective or vantage point. Number two is ego-induced denial. And number three is distance from the consequences of our decision. That's a good one right there. So again, oftentimes, these keep us from learning from our present reality. As we will learn in greater detail throughout the volumes on mental models, these can all get in the way. They make it easier to keep our existing and flawed beliefs than to update them accordingly. What we just talked about, adjusting, consistently adjusting. If there's one key focus that keeps happening in my life recently, it's this idea of change. Always changing, always updating, getting rid of the old, bringing in the new, and doing so incessantly. That's why we need to learn how to think with mental models, because if we look at our lives and there are areas of life where we're not where we want to be, it's because of our thinking. Our thinking has got us to this place. So we've got to be able to willing to put that old thinking behind and move to new thinking. They make it easier to keep our existing and flawed beliefs than update them accordingly. So let's flesh these out. He talks about the first flaw is perspective. We have a hard time seeing any system that we are in. And isn't that the truth? Right? It's kind of like when you walk into your home, you think it looks clean. Somebody else walks into it 5 minutes later, and they can find everything about your home that's not correct. Why? Because they have a new, you know, they have a different perspective on it. They're not in the system, so they can see it. Galileo had a great analogy to describe the limits of our default perspective. Imagine you are on a ship that has reached constant velocity, meaning without a change in speed or direction. You are below decks and there are no portholes. You drop a ball from your raised hand to the floor. To you, it looks as if the ball is dropping straight down, thereby confirming gravity is at work. Now imagine you are a fish with special X-ray vision and you're watching this ship go past. You see the scientist inside dropping the ball. You register the vertical change in position of the in the position of the ball. But you are also able to see a horizontal change. As the ball was pulled down by gravity, it also shifted its position east by about 20 feet. The ship moved through the water, and therefore so did the ball. The scientist on board, with no external point of reference, was not able to perceive this horizontal shift. This analogy shows us the limits of our perception. We must be open to other perspectives if we truly want to understand the results of our actions. Despite feeling that we've got all the information, if we're on a ship, the fish in the ocean has more than he can share. So again, that idea of perspectives, that if we're not careful, we just think our perspective is the only perspective. We don't want to listen to other people's perspectives. We don't want to bring other perspectives in, but we don't want to seek feedback. We don't want to take feedback from other people. And that will always bring us down. It gives a little quote here from David Foster Wallace. It says, there are these two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way, who nods at them and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And the two young fish swim on for a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over at the other and goes, "What the hell is water?" You kind of get the idea there. Perspective's important. The second flaw is ego. Many of us tend to have too much invested in our opinions of ourselves to see the world's feedback, the feedback we need to update our beliefs about reality. This creates a profound ignorance that keeps us banging our head against the wall over and over again. Our inability to learn from the world because our ego happens for many reasons, but there are two worth mentioning here. First, we're so afraid about what others will say about us that we fail to put our ideas out there and subject them to criticism. This way, we can always be right. Secondly, if we do put our ideas out there and they're criticized, our ego steps in to protect us. We become invested in defending instead of upgrading our ideas. I love that sentence right there. We become invested in defending instead of upgrading our ideas. So what we tend to think is someone's taking something away from us, as opposed to looking at that same situation and saying, "Hey, we're upgrading." You know, I think about leaders who cannot listen to the people who surround them. And the greatest leaders are able to do that. They're able to listen to the people that they hire to be around them. The worst leaders, and maybe I shouldn't say worst leaders, but the most ineffective leaders cannot do this. And this is the thing. They're not willing to upgrade their ideas. They're not willing to go to the next level. And they're not willing to say, "Hey, there's a new way of thinking about this." And I think that's how we have to see feedback. This feedback could help me upgrade how I see the world. And why would I not want that? Why would you not want that, right? But that's our second flaw right there. It's our own ego. We protect what we have instead of being willing and open to outside feedback, which again could help us upgrade. The third flaw, and this is a great one right here, is distance. The further we are from the results of our decisions, the easier it is to keep our current views rather than update them. When you put your hand on a hot stove, you quickly learn the natural consequence. You pay the price for your mistake. Since you are a pain-avoiding creature, you update your view. Again, it's this idea of updating. This is what mental models help us do. Update how we see things, update how we think about things. That's how we have to see this. Before you touch another stove, you check it to see if it's hot. But you don't just learn a micro lesson that applies in one situation. Instead, you draw a general abstraction, one that tells you to check before touching anything that could potentially be hot. Organizations over a certain size often remove us from the direct consequences of our decisions. When we make decisions that other people carry out, we are one or more levels removed and may not immediately be able to update our understanding. We come a little off the ground, if you will. The further we are from the feedback of the decisions, the easier it is to convince ourselves that we are right and avoid the challenge pain of updating our views. Admitting that we're wrong is tough. It's easier to fool ourselves that we're right at a high level than at a micro level. Because at the micro level, we see and feel the immediate consequences. When we touch the hot stove, the feedback is powerful and instantaneous. At a higher macro level, we are removed from the immediacy of the situation, and our ego steps in to create a narrative that suits what we want to believe instead of what really happened. These flaws are the main reasons we keep repeating the same mistake and why we need to keep our feet on the ground as much as possible. As Confucius said, a man who has committed a mistake and doesn't correct it is committing another mistake. That's a good one. The majority of the time, we don't even perceive what conflicts with our beliefs. It's much easier to go on thinking what we've already been thinking than go through the pain of updating. That's the word right here, updating our existing false beliefs. And when it comes to seeing what is, that is understanding reality, we can follow Charles Darwin's advice to notice things which easily escape attention and ask why things happened. We also tend to undervalue the elementary ideas and overvalue the complicated ones. Most of us get jobs based on some form of specialized knowledge, so this makes sense. We don't think we have much value if we know things that everyone else does, so we focus our effort on developing unique expertise to set ourselves apart. The problem is then when we reject the simple to make sure that we offer what we offer can't be contributed by someone else. But simple ideas are of great value because they can help us prevent complex models. In identifying the great mental models, we have looked for elementary principles, the ideas from multiple disciplines that form a time-tested foundation. It may seem counterintuitive to work on developing knowledge that is available to everyone, but the universe works in the same way no matter where you are in it. When you need to understand the principle, what you need is to understand the principle so that when the details change, you are still able to identify what is really going on. This is the part of what makes the great mental model so valuable. Understanding the principles, you can easily change tactics to apply the ones you need. Anyway, enough reading there. I think the most important thing there, a couple things that we just read, obviously the flaws, right? We don't have the right perspective. That's number one. Number two, our ego gets in the way. And then the number three, our distance from that. But I think the bigger takeaway that we need to hear, understand, you know, when we're thinking about mental models and we're thinking about taking feedback from other people, whether that's getting a different perspective, whether that's lowering our ego, or that's bringing ourselves closer to the consequences, or trusting others. As leaders, it's trusting others who are closer to the consequences, right? So when we think about these things, what we have to think about is it's upgrading our way of thinking. It's upgrading our way of seeing. It's upgrading how we take actions. That's how we have to think about this. And I think that's the biggest problem is we don't consider all of this. What we think about is just our own defensiveness. My perspective is the best. defend our own position. And we don't want to bring ourselves closer to the consequences because maybe we feel that we're too good for that. Or we don't want to bring ourselves closer to the consequences because we don't want to trust the people that we've placed closer to the consequences. These mental models exist for one reason. Again, as we dive into them, it's really about upgrading our thinking. And that's how we have to see it. Anytime somebody corrects me, anytime I have something new to think away, it's a new way of thinking, which will hopefully lead to a new path towards success. And what I hope for you and what I hope for myself is greater success going forward. But again, it means upgrading our thinking. So that's what I'm going to leave you with today. There's not much more that I need to say about this, but I'm excited to get into this idea of mental models. But here's why they're important. I think it's important that we talk about why these mental models are important before we dive into the mental models. You know, it's amazing to me as I speak to different crowds really around the world, right? A lot of it virtually. So I'm still sitting in California, but I'm having talks just like, you know, today I was with a group from Europe. A couple of weeks ago, I was with a group from Asia, but I'm sitting right here. And they're all over the world. Today we had somebody in India. We had somebody in, we had a bunch of people in all over Europe. Paris was one of them. There are a couple of places that were mentioned today. I'm in California. It's cool how technology works. But it's amazing to me when I talk to people from all over the world about mental models, most people don't know what it is. Instead, what we do is we get defensive about our thinking. We go from emotion to response. We don't stop, pause, insert mental model so we can think deeper, think better. Hey, I'm looking forward to this. So over the next 6 months, obviously we're going to get sidetracked. I've got other books I'm reading, and so I want to share some of that with you. But I'm excited as we dive into this. But I think as much as possible, I'm going to take our time on this because understanding why mental models are important, I think that's just as important as talking about the mental models. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Conversation Leadership Podcast. Take care, everybody. I wish you all good things.